And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
Hey everyone, this is Patrick. I wanted to just give a huge shout out for The Receptionist for iPad. They've been a sponsor for this podcast for 4 years in a row, and I just want to say how grateful I am to their partnership and what they do for the not only therapist, but also medical community. Your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like billing or simply trying to make a cup of coffee between appointments or trying to use the bathroom, constant interruptions can derail your entire day. This episode and this year's podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist, a sign-in app company. The Receptionist for iPad is a HIPAA-ready digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients or patients can check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from the interruptions and make the most of your time, because it is valuable. Start a free 14-day trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, this is Patrick, and I wanted to share something really exciting with you. The All Things Private Practice podcast is changing to the Neurodivergent Entrepreneur podcast. When I discovered that I was autistic ADHD 5 years ago, everything changed for me. It's wild because at that point in time, my career had just taken off. Over these last few years, I've done a lot of deconstruction, worked through a lot of internalized ableism, learned as much as I can about neurodiversity in general, and I really want to start unpacking what it means to be a neurodivergent entrepreneur. So in this podcast, I'm going to be interviewing other neurodivergent entrepreneurs of all walks of life and all different areas of business and creativity, thought leaders, visionaries, creatives, leaders, etc. Real, unfiltered, authentic conversations, no positive psychology, always highlighting both sides of the coin with a lot of nuance, a lot of duality, and a lot of honest conversation, highlighting the strength and the struggle. Make sure to download, like, subscribe, and share the Neurodivergent Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Patrick with the All Things Private Practice Podcast. I am joined today by Tasha Matthews, a good friend and colleague out in Georgia. She is a therapist, clinical director, professor, author, speaker, all the things, and just a really fucking awesome person. And today we are going to talk about boundaries, which is her specialty, and the topic of saying yes to your no. So thank you so much for making the time and coming on. I know we've been kind of like figuring out our schedules for a while now, and I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you. And I'm so happy to be here and to connect with you in this space.
You and I have connected a lot recently, like asking me to come talk to your classes and your interns. And I feel like that has been such an honor. And you know, I want to talk about you today, though, because you've created so many wonderful things and you are kind of a boundary expert, right? Like that is what you're talking about at conferences, and this is what you really are passionate about. So tell us about what this all means to you, this say yes to your no, and let's kind of just see where this goes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for just sharing a little bit. So I guess I really want to start with why this is a sweet spot for me at this point. And if I really wanted to just start off being very transparent, I sucked at setting boundaries. And I'm just starting to really figure out where that came from. Doing my own work in therapy, I identified that this boundary issue in violation of myself kind of came from being bullied early on in my life. And that bullying really caused me to want to overextend in a whole bunch of different areas. And so when we think about boundaries in business, we really just need to go back and look at what was our first introduction to boundaries. Were you taught boundaries from your family of origin? And then where did that part kind of show up in your life?
I love that. Yeah, it's good to think about it in that way. So once you started doing this deeper dive and realizing this came from bullying, I mean, what started to come up for you when you started thinking about, okay, this makes sense for me, but I imagine there was a lot of emotion connected to that as well.
Yeah. And yeah, as a 10-year-old, you don't know that bullying would cause you to overextend yourself in a lot of areas. You don't obviously until you're an adult, you start having poor finances, poor relationships at work, poor romantic relationships that you really have an issue with boundaries. And so for me, I think more recently in the last 5 years or so, I've started to look at why aren't things changing in my life and why do I keep hitting these particular roadblocks? And then I started to do more a deep dive into why and where that came from. And so the current emotions is I'm starting to accept and befriend my parts, the anxiety that comes up from not being able to set a boundary or setting too rigid of boundaries because I'm trying to self-correct. And so I think I am accepting all of the emotions regarding not being able to set some boundaries and then others being able to set them a little better.
So just embracing and accepting all the parts. And I don't know if you've been doing IFS work, but I've been doing a lot of IFS work. So parts language is in my head all the time now. And was there a grief process at all when you started to accept some of this? Like, obviously, as at 10 years old, right? Like, it's very hard to set these boundaries, especially if we're being bullied, especially if we don't have the language, especially if we just feel like we are 10 years old and we don't know how to do these things. But was there grieving for like 10-year-old Tasha that came up when you started doing this deeper dive?
Yeah, 10-year-old Tasha is actually still grieving. I think during the pandemic did so many amazing things. There was so much loss, but that was the first time I really sat with, okay, who am I and who do I want to be in the future? And so once you begin to sit with yourself and sit with, you had a lot of time to just kind of look back and kind of muse your life, so to speak. And so that was the first time I really started to grieve and put some connections together with, you know, relationships, business, because I think sometimes we try to kind of separate and compartmentalize these areas because it keeps us safe. But what I found is there was a relationship, a distinct relationship with all of my professional identity, my personal identity, my friendships, that I just didn't like how it looked, to really be honest. So even though I wrote a book in 2015, I think I was really writing it based on, I want to share this information with others, but really just really understanding the why, it just came out in the last couple of years, to be honest.
That's beautifully said, because I think it puts into perspective that healing is lifelong. And we are going to do different layers of work as we kind of move through those journeys. And to say, hey, the pandemic was really beautiful in a lot of ways, or helpful. And I agree with that. And I think a lot of people may have this like, ooh, what do you mean by that? But in reality, like, we had to sit with a lot of shit. Like, we had to sit with ourselves a lot more. We had to do a lot more introspection and existential questioning about like, how much more time do we have on this planet? And I think that allows you to kind of start to really think about deeper dives into what's going on for you. And it sounds like in 2015, when you wrote this book, do you feel like if you wrote it today, the voice would be different? Like, the author would feel like a different human being and a different perspective?
Yes, I am going to do a revision of the book, because I think I was speaking from a place of anger and frustration. Although I was sharing, I had a lot of anxiety about putting my business out in the streets. I was like, what the hell? What are you doing? It's not going to be life. So I was fighting against the parts of wanting to be like and wanting to please a whole bunch of people. They weren't going to see the nice, warm and fuzzy put together person. And I wasn't really ready to be vulnerable. And so an anxiety disorder kind of popped up because of that. I started having a lot of anxiety with my driving. That was not in my presentation before. And I'm like, well, damn, this book is supposed to bring a lot of joy. And so I was even resistant to really writing the book, because it wasn't a happy experience for me, because I didn't know what was going on the inside, to be honest, Patrick. I didn't know that I was resisting a part of me, and I didn't know about all this stuff. So the language would be different. I would be speaking from a more befriending of who I am and the parts that were really trying to protect me from way back when, because the 10-year-old Tasha was not protected. And so that part kind of shows up a lot for me.
Yeah, I appreciate that vulnerability, and that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like that protective part, albeit very useful in a lot of ways, at this point in time, you're kind of asking that part to step to the side and thanking it for existing, but at the same time saying like, okay, you've done it, you've done your job. And now I would like to move through this to the acceptance piece of like, hey, this is how boundary setting looks. And isn't boundary setting protecting in a lot of ways? Like, you're protecting your energy, you're protecting who you spend time with, where you kind of spend your resources, how you let people into your world and how you let people affect you and impact you. And what I heard you say was like, and which I think is so fucking common, and I think this all the time, of like, I'm putting this out to the world, I'm kind of airing my stuff, like you said, I'm putting it out to the streets. That leaves you open, right? That leaves you vulnerable. That allows for people to critique you or say something negative that you may, that may not feel good. And it makes so much sense that that anxious and protective part kind of came up and they were like, no way, like, we need to make sure you're okay. But by doing the work and kind of having that acceptance process, it's like, I can be okay and I can do these things, right? Like, both of these things can be true simultaneously.
Yes, it's, you know, I haven't really spent a lot of time with that book because I wrote it, I put it down, and I'm really just starting to accept all parts of me. I know we do a lot of shit. We do speaking, we do all of the things, even accepting that I'm good at some stuff. It really just really accepted it and sitting with it. I struggle with that. Even coming on the podcast today, I struggle with, okay, well, do I have something valuable to say? And so I'm befriending even those parts that are still trying to show up, even in the podcast, to protect me from what the world may think. And so it's really just a fascinating, you're in the world, you're being present, you're feeling, and just kind of flowing with it, to be honest.
Can we sit with that for a second? You just named a lot of powerful stuff. Like you said, I'm really good at some shit. How does that feel? You're lighting up a little bit as you're, can you soak that in? Cause I struggle. Like I talk about this, I fucking struggle, but can you take that in?
I don't normally take it in. I just was going to, well, what if I take it in? But that feels really good and authentic just to say I am good at some shit. It really, but even in my heart and not, you know, conceptualize it and make it true in my head.
I love it. And, you know, I'm a fan and I'm a friend and I watch the outside looking in, and you posted the other day, like, what's happening for 2022 for you. And you have all these like conferences and speaking engagements. And for me, I was like, that is so fucking cool. That's who I want to be when I grow up, is like doing all of these things. And I think it's so cool that, but I also think it's so common for us to almost downplay and minimize the things that we're doing. And I appreciate humility. I love that trait and quality, but I think we sometimes like really, really buy into this, like, I'm not doing enough, or I haven't created enough, or like, what do I really have to offer, right? Like that imposter syndrome stuff really fucking comes up, and it kind of says like, play small, you don't deserve to take up space almost.
Yeah, I definitely think about that often. I think about, you know, as we pertain to study balance, because that's, you know, this conversation can take us in all different types of ways. So I started off with saying yes to your no. So I said yes to a lot of shit, right? And so learning that play on words, saying yes to your no, means sometimes you have to really evaluate the yes. So you can really say yes to the things that really align with you. And so that's going to cause you to say no. If you cannot say no, you're not going to be able to say yes. And so I'm feeling like that I am in alignment with what, you know, what I want to do. But I'm also creating more space to just not do anything, so opportunity and energy can come my way. I think last year and during the pandemic, everybody wanted us. They wanted us because we were needed. And so there's some prostitution and abuse that comes with that. Like, we want you. And so I had to sit with the part that says, I want to be wanted. And so now I'm coming out of that, like, yeah, I know I'm a badass and I don't need to be wanted by every organization, every person who wants me to speak, every person who wants to get information from me or try to make me feel good by saying I'm this or that. And so I think that now it's time to not just be doing all of the things. I want to have enough space, though, if an opportunity presents itself, I don't have anxiety about needing to switch it or tell somebody else no. And so now I'm creating that space of nothingness, and I really enjoy that as well.
That's really beautifully said. And that sounds like saying yes, essentially like being open to more opportunities, but now so saying yes, but with intentionality. So saying yes and saying, I'm saying yes because I want to say yes. I'm saying yes because this is something that feels energizing or passionate for me, instead of I'm saying yes because I'm people pleasing or I feel like I have to.
Yes, yes. And then I like how you had me just sit with the feelings that I get when I think about all the amazing things that I'm doing. I think sometimes we really have to sit with the opportunity, like just kind of somebody presents something to you and you sit with how the energy flows through your body and what you really feel about accepting it. I think we move on so fast. We get the proposal. We're like, oh, yes, this is what I want to do. But we're not really sitting and asking our body any questions about the opportunity. We're just like checking yes and going.
Yeah, I can relate to everything you just said. And that is something I work on a continuous basis. There was a moment that stands out for me when I was in Ireland at the retreat that I hosted this March. And we were on this tour bus in the middle of the countryside, in the middle of nowhere. It was just the people in the retreat. And someone turned around and looked at me and they're like, can you take it in that you created this? Like, we're in the middle of Ireland on this private tour bus, driving around doing these cool things. And it's because of you. And like, my reaction is to be like, no, I can't take that in. But I think as someone who's autistic, it's hard sometimes to take it in and have body sensation. But the more I've sat with that, the more I'm like, holy shit, that was pretty fucking cool that I was able to pull that off. But that came with risk-taking and also saying yes to opportunities and pushing myself out of a comfort zone that I probably never would have done had it not been for the last couple of years. And it sounds like for you, having a lot of similar experiences in that, but also still really struggling when someone says your accomplishments out loud to take it in, because it's like, oof. Are you talking about me? That can't be me.
Yeah, definitely accepting and sitting with all of the feelings is pretty important for me as I kind of figure out, what I want to do when I grow up. You said you want to do some things that I'm doing, but I'm still figuring it out. Like, I am always looking for opportunities that align with where I'm at in the moment. And I realize in the last couple of years that I'm learning to do in the moment stuff very well. I try to balance out the spontaneity of a thing and the structure that's needed to pull stuff off. But also recognizing that I can change careers if I want to. I can do something different. And that is a boundary as well, not putting limits on yourself in this profession. And you talk a lot about, creating your own path. And creating your own path could take you out of counseling. It could take you out of entrepreneurship. You could decide that you're going to move out of the country and do missionary work. And so for the listeners, just being open to, of course, what your body is telling you, and then not feeling judged or critical of yourself. If you decide that you went to school and you spent $80,000 and you don't want to do it anymore. I just think that that is real talk. And we just want to free people from needing to stay with something that doesn't bring them joy.
Just silent because I'm taking it in what you're saying. And I think it's so true for everyone listening that feels like I did this thing. It no longer brings me joy, but that also brings me shame. Because then it's like, why don't I enjoy this anymore? What's wrong with me? I spent all, like you said, $80,000. I'm like, holy shit, my student loans are at like 150. But in reality, like, I am moving out of being a therapist, but I had a lot of shamefulness around that. Like, I'm abandoning this profession that I worked so hard to to become a part of. And one of my mentors kind of reframed it. And she was like, I think you're just helping the profession in a different way. And even my therapist was like, I don't think you were ever really designed to be a therapist, because, you know, I don't want to go down the neurodivergent route right now, but as an autistic therapist, the energy absorption is huge. You know, tracking every facial expression and movement and the energy that comes with it, I would find myself feeling so depleted by the end of the day. And I know a lot of therapists feel like that in general, but nevertheless, shamefulness comes up. But you are so right, where it's like, follow that joy, because that is another way to protect your energy and set boundaries, right? Where it's like, I'm pursuing something that really feels fulfilling for me. And that's probably going to change throughout the course of your life and career. I don't think we, our generations, are the type of people who are going to stay in one job for 40 years. That's just not going to happen. You know, with capitalism, with the fact that employers typically aren't like compensating well or offering retirement plans, why the fuck would we? And I think that's a different way of thinking for a lot of people, to realize like, I'm probably going to bounce from one thing to one thing to one thing based on what is interesting and exciting and is really feeling energizing.
Yeah, I had to really learn to be okay with that. You know, I started off in corporate HR, which was very rigid, and I, you know, developed a lot of organizational trauma from that experience. And then I went into counseling and said, you know, I'm doing it on my terms. I'm going to do the things that I want to do, and, you know, see the clients I want to see. I'm going to have some autonomy in it. And so I do think that there is still a grief and loss process of letting go with all that you created to create something else. And again, for the listeners, you have to be able to sit with that grief and loss and have some acceptance and do your own work regarding it. But it's not bad to want to move on. And so looking at life as a journey, like, there's a lot of stops along the way. I think that for me, the limit that I put on my mind is that everything is a destination. Like, we're trying to get somewhere. And when you put that in, get somewhere on top of something, and you reach that, and then you still have that internal feeling that says there's more, then you're in conflict and there's some resistance. So we were able to take off the destination and just call it a journey. We know that there's lots of things that are going to happen in the journey.
I like that. Yeah, I think that helps us kind of focus on the present moment instead of what the finish line is. And there may not be a finish line in entrepreneurship if you are going to bounce around and do different things. And, you know, I know for myself, like, I'm a private practice coach now, but I don't think I'm going to be a private practice coach forever. I just know that I'm also interested in so many other things. And then once something starts to pull me away, I'm going to probably pursue that. Like, I've really become energized by the retreat planning and the podcasting, and maybe that doesn't last forever either. And I think we always associate grief and loss with like negative emotion. I don't think it has to be negative. I think grief and loss is so fucking complicated and complex and layered, but grief and loss can be beautiful, because we can grieve part of our life that's changing. We can also really appreciate the fact that it's shifting into something else. And without that grief, without that pain point, how could we ever appreciate what comes next and what chapter is starting to unfold?
Yeah, I like that, Patrick. I think grief and loss has always been associated with something negative, and there needs to be this painful moment. But I do like that we can reframe grief and loss, and that it could be some new awareness, some new revelation, some new insight as we move on into something else. So we can hold space for all of the emotions, but it doesn't have to feel bad. And I think sometimes for me, when things aren't feeling bad and I've attached grief to it, I'm searching like, okay, when am I going to feel bad? You know, I need to feel bad before I move on to this thing. And I do think boundaries can have a negative effect because you are putting limits on yourself. So when you haven't done well at setting boundaries, I think the first inclination is to go very rigid. Like, oh, I've made this mistake before, so I'm going to stay in this profession 5 more years because I don't want to make that mistake again. I don't want to experience the grief. And so I think we have to really just be open to not putting that cognitive response and allowing our minds say, allowing our minds tell us it needs to look like this.
Yeah, I love that. I was actually about to ask you that, like, do boundaries have to be rigid? And I don't think that they do, right? Like, sometimes, yes, they should probably be rigid in certain situations, but in reality, boundaries are probably a gray area for a lot of people, and they're probably going to be an ebb and flow based on what you learn, how you grow, you know, as you move through things. And I like that you named, I was waiting to feel bad. And I think we do that to ourselves so often, and it's good. It's a good check emotionally to say, like, oh, you know, I'm grieving, but I don't feel devastated. What's that about? Like, what's wrong with me if that's not the case? And, you know, I'm just thinking, and my ADHD is currently taking over, where I'm like, I talk about, like, grieving the loss of addiction and recovery, which seems like really strange for people. However, like grieving people, places, and things that were familiar and routine for you when you're struggling in an addiction. And that should be a, I'm not devastated. I'm not sad about the grief that comes with like recovery, but it is a process where you're like, I did these things every day of my life. I hung out with these people. I spent time in these places. And although they weren't healthy, it's still a component. So that's a conversation for a different day. So I apologize to the audience for going down that rabbit hole. But anyway.
It's relevant though. It's relevant.
Yeah, it is relevant. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, you're a professor, you're a clinical supervisor. You are really having a lot of influence on how therapists are moving through the world and starting their careers and experiencing. And I've been honored and grateful to be a part of your internship class and your practicum class. And I love the fact that you are bringing people like myself into these situations, because so many people that are in academia really don't talk about business ownership. It's almost taboo to do so. So when I get invites like your own, I'm like, oh, wow, this is cool. And then I have to ask myself, like, what should I say? What don't I say? Like, what do I like not talk about? But I really love the fact that you empower your students and your interns to like think bigger and think differently, with the realization that there does not have to be one specific path in this career.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you why I do that. So for those that don't know, back in 2015, 2016, I dropped out of my PhD program. So people don't know that I've done everything but dissertation. And one of the reasons I dropped out of the program is because, for one, I was starting to struggle with the writing. But for two, I felt like I did not set a good boundary. And so I was trying to do what the Joneses were doing, what everybody else was doing, to be all of the things. But academia on a more full-time basis did not align with my core beliefs. And so I had a lot of resistance and began to struggle. Actually got kicked out of my program and had to fight to get back in. But as I had got kicked out of the program, then I'm okay with being vulnerable with it now, because it doesn't hold me hostage like it did before. I had a lot of grief and loss about not having a PhD, and hats off to all of the ones that made it through. I didn't, but I'm still doing a lot of badass shit. I'm still teaching. I've been teaching since I got kicked out of the program. And again, I think that one of the reasons why I resonate with you and Ernesto and Jen and all of the people that I met is because we're not doing it the typical way. And so I know that probably a lot of professors don't bring people in that are non-traditional. And so I just felt like there was just so much rigidity in the academic space. They weren't teaching us how to be business owners. I needed to go work in a jail, work in a hospital, work in a residential treatment facility. And with an HR background, that did not align with who I was. And so even in the programs, I was trying to, that was a part of my dissertation, how to be successful in private practice. And so I wasn't able to do it in an academic realm, but I've definitely been able to do it with my own trainings. And so if you have the privilege of teaching, you better make sure that you're giving your students opportunities to connect with real clinicians and people who are doing it differently, or they're not going to make it in this profession. This not going to happen.
I really appreciate you sharing that. And I love the fact that you can own it too and just be like, yeah, it didn't work out. It was probably painful at the time, but in reality, I'm still doing badass shit, whether I have those letters behind my name or not. And I would argue that you're having such more of an impact now, being able to support these people as they go into this profession, because we need supervisors and professors like you. We need people who want their people to succeed in something other than the traditional go into community mental health route, spend your days there, earn your stripes, burn yourself out, then you can leave and then you can start a business. And, you know, I know a lot of people listen to this and are in community mental health, and maybe you are going to stay there and that is okay. I'm not shaming you for making your own decisions, but just know that there are multiple pathways in this profession. And I was one of those people who graduated and thought that was my only option until it wasn't. And then it was like, well, what else can I create with the skills that I have? Or I'm going to have to figure out, like, do I go back to bartending? Do I like go get another degree? Like, it just, we need to know that people are doing things differently and that people don't always have to work inside of a mold or a box. And I think going to Hawaii, meeting you, meeting Marquita, like so many other wonderful people, it just puts into perspective how many people are out there doing these things, but like, we don't always see that. And I think COVID really brought that to the forefront for us, because how many like friend requests did you get from people with like the telehealth, I'm a telehealth therapist banner, and you had like 101 day. And I'm like, I don't fucking know any of these people, but I'm accepting them all. Like, yeah, I have all these cool friends now that I've never met. And some of these people have become like some of my closest friends, and some of them I still have not met in person. But in reality, the cool thing is they're all doing their own things in a different way. And I think that's so empowering and powerful to recognize, like, this career is limitless if we can just take a step back and understand how our skill sets are so transferable and applicable in so many different settings.
Yeah, I definitely have met some amazing people as well. And I do think back to those community-based days, because I was in community mental health just like everyone else. And what I would say to the listeners, if you're in community-based health and community-based work, I know you need to get your hours. Make sure that you have a good mentor. Because I had counseling as a second career, I was a little more bold to quit. I know that some clinicians aren't able to do that because of fear of hours, fear of rejection. They got to take care of their family. And so I would say to you, make sure that you have a good mentor if you're going to stay in community-based or residential treatment that helps you advocate for yourself and helps you with your professional identity and voice. I do think that if you're going to stay there, you have to speak up and advocate for yourself so you're not traumatized early on in your career. I believe I experienced a lot of organizational trauma. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that I needed hours, but I didn't have some boldness to just quit and say, I'm not doing it anymore. And so sometimes that's what you have to do. You have to quit. So that is a boundary.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. And I, like you said, I want to also acknowledge, like, some people can't quit, right? Like, there are components here that where it's like, I just need this paycheck. I have to survive. And I, you know, I'm never going to knock anyone for that at all. But at the same time, you're right. Sometimes you need to just quit. And I look at these jobs as emotionally abusive relationships. Like, you know what you're going to get and when you're going to get it, but that doesn't mean that you're going to feel good about it. And that doesn't mean that you are going to feel like you feel safe or you feel heard or you feel seen or your needs are getting met. And it's a shame that so many people hang on for so much longer than they wanted to. And I always hear like, man, I wish I would have done this sooner. But there are so many reasons why we don't. And I think that even for students coming out of grad school who are like going into group practices, I'm all about it because my clinical director at my group practice is the fucking bomb. So she's going to give such better supervision than you're going to get with someone who's overworked, underpaid, who has too many supervisees on their caseload. It's not their fault. But at the same time, if you can work with a supervisor like mine or whoever else like you, like you're getting a different experience that you probably would not have gotten in a job that requires you to be available 50 to 60 hours a week.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that it's just really important to always do a self-evaluation as you are entering and moving into this field or moving out of the field. It's just important for you to kind of check in and have that good tribe. I think that's what we created, Patrick, is just a tribe of individuals that you trust that are going to be vulnerable. You're going to see the good, bad, and the ugly. And not that you need to judge that, but just know that it happens. We're not perfect. We're making mistakes. We're letting people know we make mistakes, and we are accepting our mistakes. We're befriending our mistakes just as we do our successes as well. That has been something that, if I think about it, any growth opportunities that I've been able to sit with, it's just accepting the fallacy that I told myself about being perfect. I don't know why I told myself that, or I didn't verbalize it, but I think that in your mind, you feel like you have to be perfect. And again, that goes back to my five-year-old self that, you know, I didn't look the way some little boy on a bus thought I needed to look. I mean, he was five as well, so clearly we were both kids, but updating your language about yourself and knowing that you don't have to be perfect and continue to do your own work in therapy is really going to help you resolve some of that conflict that still shows up.
Couldn't say it better myself. So I think that is the perfect note to end on. I think that these are all really great points for everyone listening in terms of how to protect your energy, how to set boundaries, how to say no. And I hope you can take all of this in. Tasha, I just want to thank you for making the time. And I also want to really ask you to tell the audience where they can find more of what you're offering, because I think that it's so damn useful. And I think a lot of people would benefit from that.
Yes, yes. Thank you for having me. I hope these tips have been useful for you. You can find me on LatashaMatthews.com on all platforms and my website, LatashaMatthews.com. I have a book called The Dumping Ground, and I have boundary setting bars for families, couples, teens, and general population.
Love it. Thanks for sharing that. That will all be in the show notes for everyone listening. And like, download, subscribe, and share. New episodes out every Sunday morning of the All Things Private Practice podcast on all major platforms. Doubt yourself, do it anyway, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Tasha.
You're welcome.